There was a man in the church who was a bit distraught. So he goes to the pastor, and this pastor is a particularly wise man, as he should be. And he goes to the pastor and he says, "As you know, I have been blind since I was born." And he says, "That doesn't bother me. What bothers me is that people will come up to me and tell me that if I just had more faith, I would be healed." And the pastor, being a wise man, he paused for a moment before saying anything. And then he said, "I see that you carry a cane with you. What I want you to do is that whenever somebody says that to you, hit them over the head with the cane really hard. And then tell them that if they had more faith, it wouldn't hurt." How many of you would like to have more faith? How many of you feel that if you just had a little more faith, that you could really get things done? I stand up here each week and I talk about discipleship and commitment and good works. And along the way, I hope I am challenging you to be disciples of Christ. And how many of you are thinking, "You know, I really do want to do those things he's talking about, but I'm just not ready yet. What I need to get me going is, well, just a little more faith. That's all I need." Now, nothing would make me happier than to be able to give you more faith. I wish that I had a fountain of faith. I could give you a booster shot whenever you wanted. Maybe our delivery system would be the communion each Sunday. "Here, have a shot of faith in this communion cup." Or maybe you could do good works or go to a Sunday school class and get a fortification of faith. In our reading today, the disciples make a request that Jesus increase their faith. They want more. They need more faith. My first reaction when I read that is that the disciples are being just a little self-serving by asking Jesus for more faith. But when I looked at the challenges that Jesus put before them, I think I might demand the same thing. Jesus in the Gospel of Luke has a history of extraordinary expectations. He says, "Give to anyone who begs from you. If somebody hits you, turn the other cheek," and other things. So I can sympathize with the disciples for feeling just a little overwhelmed, wondering if they're really cut out for this discipleship thing. As we read today, Jesus offers more expectations on discipleship. As a reminder, we are in that middle section of Luke's gospel we call the travel narrative. It's called this because it begins with the words, "Jesus turned his face towards Jerusalem." And so for a number of chapters in the middle of the gospel, we have what are essentially the teachings and parables and miracles of Jesus. And Luke uses these as teaching tools for his congregation to teach them what it means to be a disciple. The first thing that we read today is Jesus talking to his disciples about stumbling in faith. He says, "Occasions for stumbling are bound to come, but woe to anyone by whom they come." In other words, people of faith, we will stumble, we will falter, we will sin. But heaven help anyone that is the cause of that stumbling. Jesus goes on to say it would be better for those people if a millstone were hung around their neck and they were thrown into the sea than should they cause any of these little ones to stumble. And by little ones, he doesn't mean children, but he means those who are less mature in their faith. Those who are mature in faith can be strong role models. They can also easily cause a weak one to falter. The Apostle Paul addresses this same issue in his letter to the Corinthians when he writes, "But take care that this freedom of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak." Secondly, Jesus teaches about forgiveness. He says, if another disciple sins, then you must forgive them. Even if this is repeated 7 times a day, you must repent. You must forgive. Now, not causing someone to stumble, that's one thing. But forgiving those who sin, especially if they sin against us, is another. So in response, the disciples turn to Jesus and make that request for more faith. Why? Because they feel that they are going to need it if they're going to be the disciples that he wants them to be. Jesus tells the disciples that if they had faith just the size of a mustard seed, then they could say to that mulberry tree over there, "Be uprooted and planted in the sea," and it would obey. But that is, of course, impossible, isn't it? Trees don't just uproot themselves and jump into the ocean. What Jesus is telling his disciples is not about having more faith, but using the faith that they already possess. Faith in any amount has immeasurable power. This faith can do the impossible. The reading continues with another teaching about discipleship. He says, disciples have a job to do. Now, unfortunately, this particular teaching is couched within the language of slavery. And slavery was part of the culture of Jesus' day. So it's a bit of a challenge for us to understand it fully. Jesus poses a question to his disciples. He says to them, "Who among you would say to your slave, when the slave has just come in from the field at the end of the day, 'Come over here and take your place at the table'?" The obvious answer is none. Slaves don't have a place at the table of the master. Instead, Jesus says, you would say, "Fix my supper. Serve me while I eat and drink. Later, when I'm done, then you can eat." Because that is the proper order of things. Then Jesus asks, "Do you thank the slave for doing what the slave was commanded to do?" And the answer again is no. I think of it kind of like basic training in the army. When the drill sergeant orders the platoon to go on a run, he's not going to thank them at the end when they get back. The job of the drill sergeant is to command. The job of the troops is to follow. It's the same with the master and the slaves. It's the same with the disciples. They have their job, Jesus says. They have their place. Then he says, "When you have done all that you were ordered to do, you are to say, 'We are worthless slaves. We have done only what we ought to have done.'" Again, the slavery image is difficult for us, but Jesus' point is that as disciples, we have jobs to do. We don't do them for the adulation or the gratitude. We do them because it is what we do. Once again, I can hear Luke, the pastor, coming through in these words of Jesus. Luke is teaching his people that to be faithful does not require that they are to be heroic. As one theologian says about this passage, faith is just doing your job, just doing your duty, not because of any sense of reward, but simply because it needs doing. Faith, in other words, he says, is doing what needs to be done right in front of you. As I look out over the congregation, what is it that I would wish for? Do I want a congregation that has one or two superheroes performing one or two incredible feats of faith? Well, that would be nice. Maybe one of you could start a medical mission in Guatemala. Or would I rather have a congregation where everyone participates, but maybe in smaller and more human-sized feats of faith, some of which may never even be noticed. I would like the second, because I want every person engaged in expressions of faith, no matter how small or seemingly insignificant. For example, when I invite the children down, what I say to them week after week pretty much repeats, doesn't it? I encourage them to show kindness, to show mercy and compassion. I ask them to look for the kid that's ignored and show them love and appreciation. It's simple stuff, but maybe it'll sink in. And if it sinks in, maybe it'll take root and grow within them. Faith isn't just some idea or concept up in the sky. Faith is a muscle. And like any muscle, the more it is exercised, the stronger it will become. For the kids, for all of us. I want to tell you a story. It's a story about myself, and it may sound like that I'm bragging, but trust me, I am not bragging, because every time I remember this story, I'm as surprised as you would be, and I was there. Story is that one Saturday last summer, I was working in the yard at the house, and I needed to run some errands. I needed to go to Walmart, then I needed to go to Lowe's, and at Lowe's I needed to get some mulch, and because I needed some mulch, I hooked up my trailer to my truck, drove to Walmart because I was only going to be there just for one thing, and I knew where it was, in the garden center, run in, grab it, pay for it, run back out, go to Lowe's. Driving the trailer into Walmart, I park in the parking lot, but because I've got this trailer, I need to find a place where I can pull all the way through, and the closest spot is next to a big electrical truck, one of those bucket trucks. I parked there, ran in, ran back out, but in that couple of minutes that I was gone, I came back, I noticed the truck had moved, but only a few feet. And as I came around the truck, I saw that my trailer had also moved because the truck had run into my trailer. The driver of the truck was standing there. He sees me and he says, "Is this your trailer?" And I went, "Yeah, it is." And he begins to apologize profusely. He says, "I'm so sorry, I didn't see it." And to be honest, no, he couldn't see it. I parked it in his blind spot. I shouldn't have parked it there. And then he says, "I want to pay you for the damages to your trailer, but I just need to give you cash because if I, you know, make a claim through the company, it'll be all this paperwork, and this would just be easier." So I go over, I look at the trailer, and I go, "You don't owe me anything. It's not a problem." And he says, "But I broke the taillight on your trailer." And I go, "Nah, it's been busted for months. I've been meaning to fix it and just haven't." And he says, "Well, that arm that the taillight's on, it's bent." I said, "I can bend it back." He goes, "The weld, it might break. I've got a friend who's got an arc welder. He'll fix it for me. He owes me one." The guy was very nice, but very confused that I wouldn't take any money from him. And after we chat for a few moments, he looks at me and goes, "Are you married?" This was not where I expected this conversation to go. And I assured him, I said, yeah, I'm married. And he goes, "Your wife, she must think she is the luckiest person in the world to be married to you." And I said, yeah, I'm sure she does. And we parted ways. I tell this story because it's a reminder to me that these little unexpected, unplanned things that happen to us are ways through which we can be disciples of Christ in this world. We don't have to do big, heroic, superhuman acts of faith. We just have to do our everyday acts of faith. Imagine this. What if it were possible to tally up all the good that you did in a week, this past week? Whether you are employers or as employees, as students, as parents, as volunteers, anything. I have a feeling that if we could tally up all the good that we did, we would have a mountain of good. And I'm not talking about the big things. I'm talking about the little things that we do. Maybe it's giving an employee a second chance. Or maybe it's fixing a meal for someone who's struggling. Or offering a hand to a neighbor. Or helping a stranger change a tire. Being a good friend. Or maybe listening to someone who's going through a difficult divorce. Maybe it's just being a careful driver on your way to work, or even paying your taxes. All these things that we do, I can't list them all. It's impossible. But I am confident that you do these things and more, not because you wake up in the morning and say, today I'm going to do good things. No, you do it because you have accepted this life as disciples of Christ. You do what you ought to have done, as Jesus said. Now, then, imagine that in the past week, nobody had done any of these things. Our community, our world would be darker, wouldn't it? As people of faith, how we lead our lives doesn't just matter to us, but it matters to the world as well. So each week, as I preach about discipleship and hopefully challenge you to be disciples, to grow in your faith, I want to let you know that you need not worry about having enough faith, because you do. You have it. I can see it. I can feel it. It may be small, but it is certainly enough. Just be a disciple. Exercise your everyday faith. Do your job as a follower of Christ, and you can move mulberry trees. You might even move a mountain. Amen.